Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
Well, that was neither part of a political campaign nor a theatrical performance. It's the way the Secretary of Health of the Republic of the Philippines, Dr. Juan Flavier, approaches National Immunization Day, in which 500,000 volunteers work together in a tremendous display of teamwork to vaccinate the entire child population of 10 million against polio and other diseases. In 1977, the Geneva-based World Health Organization declared that smallpox had been wiped off the face of the earth. 10 years later, in 1988, the WHO was given the mandate to free the world of polio by the year 2000. And latest data indicate that the campaign is on target. The number of countries reporting zero cases rose in 1993 to 141, the highest ever recorded. At the present time, polio is either absent or at low levels in Western and Central Europe, the Americas, North, Southern, and Eastern Africa, the Arabian Peninsula, and the Western Pacific region. Focusing on the anti-polio effort in the Philippines, the number of new cases there is virtually zero. The secret of its success has been a well-organized and orchestrated campaign based on National Immunization Days conducted twice a year, 1 month apart, under the direction of the Department of Health in Manila. The Philippines is the first country in the Western Pacific region to have started NIDs. Actually, 1994 is the second year that these NIDs have been conducted in the Philippines. What is hoped to be the final series will take place next year. National Immunization Days are designed to vaccinate the entire country's child population in just 1 day, which is obviously no simple matter. On the contrary, it requires a lot of planning. Dr. Maritel Costales is the head of maternal and child health at the Department of Health in Manila and is also its polio NID project manager.
We had to make guidelines, policies and all in relation to National Immunization Day, and we were doing this in cooperation with the local field health personnel. And of course, one of the other things we feel is a secret is that there was a feeling of ownership about the project. It's the president's project, it's the project of the mayor, it's the project of the governor, it's the project of the school teacher. It is no longer a Department of Health project. It is the project of the Filipino people.
Now, with so much motivation and such a high degree of compliance and enthusiasm, this would be a golden opportunity not only to treat the or address the problem of polio, it would seem, but other childhood ailments and diseases, other kinds of vaccinations for other diseases. How did you piggyback the effort in that sense?
Last year, we said that aside from polio vaccine, we'll be giving the 1 to 2 year old with measles immunization, and then the 15 to 44 year old women with tetanus toxoid. Because in my country, women's immunization is not as good as the child immunization, and so it was going to be a test of how good the whole campaign was. And aside from that, during the second National Immunization Day, we also added vitamin A for the 12 months to 59 months, and the public response was tremendous.
Dr. Maritel Costales of the Philippines Department of Health. One of the key forces in the fight to eradicate polio worldwide is the non-governmental service organization Rotary International, which is financing the purchase of polio vaccines through their program called Polio Plus. In the case of the Philippines, to the tune of nearly 50%. Manila Rotarian Oscar De Venecia is the national project chairman.
In 1988, they started a volunteer contribution from all Rotarians, more than 1 million Rotarians, to raise $120 million to immunize all the children of the world. But amazingly, in 1989, when the program to collect money came in, we raised $230 million. In the Philippines, $7 million has so far been given out as grants to buy the vaccines, the polio vaccines, to be used in immunizing the children. Aside from that, we have more than 500 Rotary clubs in the Philippines. They are also contributing about 10,000 pesos, or roughly about $400. Every time the immunization campaign goes on, for them to spend locally to make sure that the children are brought from their villages to the centers, to make sure they're given something like candies and food for the health workers, because this is a whole day campaign. So this is the amount of money that are being spent by the Rotary clubs and Rotarians, aside from the contribution of Rotary International, which is to date about $7 million.
Young primary school children in Manila with their musical greeting to the Secretary of Health, Juan Flavier, as he officially opened the second National Immunization Day for 1994 at 7 a.m. on March 16th. After he personally vaccinated dozens of children at this open-air neighborhood vaccination center, I joined Dr. Flavier for a day of island hopping to visit health stations in two different parts of the country. After a 2.5-hour flight from Manila, the two-engine plane touched down to a warm welcome at the city of Zamboanga on the southern island of Mindanao. In the midst of the excitement, I spoke with Anita Sarita Hernandez, a local radio and television journalist who described the vital role the local media had played in sensitizing the public to the NID idea.
We inform the people on what's the effect of this, and we do inform them on what they'll benefit out of this National Immunization Day.
What kind of reaction have you had from the public? Maybe some kind of skepticism?
Well, actually, we don't experience any problem for that matter, because basically you could see everybody seems to be excited about it.
This is an island that has a lot of remote areas to it, and people are not all here. They live in the mountain areas, they live in the hills. Do you think that everyone is being reached by this campaign?
Yes, because the Department of Health is trying its best to reach the farthest barangay, the farthest area in every city or place.
And I see that the secretary seems to be a man who knows how to deal with a microphone and a television camera. He seems very at home.
Oh, yes, because, you know, he's a terrific artist. He's a good material for us.
Okay, well, we both have some work to do. You get on to yours and I'll continue with mine.
Okay.
Thanks, Anita. Bye-bye.
After Zamboanga City, it was off to the small central island of Madinduque. And another display of team spirit and an enthusiastic welcome with a local flavor. A group of some 20 men playing wooden sticks in perfect unison. After our musical greeting at the airport, we drove inland to visit one of the more rural vaccination stations. Health Secretary Juan Flavier couldn't conceal his satisfaction and pride at the way things were going.
This is Kawit, and since this morning, they have had the vaccination. And in Kawit, which is this village, they already have 104%. Amoingon and Bunganay are two other villages which will be reporting momentarily.
By what?
By 3 o'clock. Otherwise, we attack.
Let me ask you, Secretary, what does that mean, 104%? Does that mean there's been some repetition of the vaccination?
No, what it means really is that it's a bigger population than originally counted in the last census of 1990. Uh-huh. That's what it means.
But it's 100% coverage with vaccine,
yeah,
in that case.
All of them. Mm-hmm. And if we can maintain that until 1995, polio will disappear from the face of the Philippines. That'll be a tremendous achievement.
So it looks like they've done their job here.
Yes, very well, very well. With the leadership of our congresswoman and the other leaders here. That's very key, you see. They own the program. It's their show. I just come here to watch.
Okay.
This is the barrio or village of Lailai. And their target is 295 children. They have now, as of 3 p.m., 238. That means 57 to go. And they will do that by going house to house. That's what they'll do.
And they're going to finish today?
Yes. And that's the wonder of it all. It's done in one day, as though it were a fiesta.
They have fun doing it.
Right, right. That's important.
Part of the fiesta-like celebrations that were part of the National Immunization Day on the island of Madinduque on March 16th. After the program of immunization has been completed, the next crucial step in eradicating polio will be surveillance to assure that the polio virus has been truly eliminated. Not one single new case can be tolerated. Another important step in eradicating polio, and one that goes hand in hand with surveillance, is so-called mopping up operations following an NID. This often requires long treks and house-to-house visits by health workers in order to locate and immunize those relatively few children who were not reached during the official NIDs. Dr. Antonio Ilano is the health officer of the province of Cavite, just outside Manila. This is an industrial area that has attracted a large number of migrants in search of employment, making control, mopping up, and surveillance more difficult.
It is our setup here where we have rural health units in all the municipalities of Cavite. And each rural health unit has a staff of a physician, a public health nurse, and midwives. Now, if they miss the NID, they are being given vaccination on a regular vaccination day, which is a Wednesday of every week. That is our regular vaccination day.
Even door-to-door if necessary?
If necessary, even door-to-door, because they are under the direct supervision of our midwives.
To become somewhat philosophical and pragmatic, one might pose the question, if polio is already relatively rare and under control, why spend all the time, money, and effort to eradicate it? Surely there must be higher priorities. The equally down-to-earth response comes from WHO Technical Officer for the Western Pacific, Alan Schnoor.
Eradication is a different order of magnitude than control. By eradication, we mean that the disease will never return. We are going to destroy the virus to make it extinct like the dodo bird. So it can never return, as was done for smallpox. We will do the same thing with polio, and with the experience and network we are establishing for polio, we will be able to go on and do the same thing to eradicate measles.
Alan Schnoor of the WHO's Western Pacific Regional Office in Manila. And that brings us to the end of this special program,
in which we focused on the campaign to eradicate polio worldwide by the year 2000 and how it has been conducted in the Philippines.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
I feel something going out from my chest, and I see my body lying, and I was flying away from my body. It was a wonderful light. I was in this light. I didn't have a body. I have had only my ego. I could see all things and a very clear perception. Thereafter, sounds of music, very, very beautiful music. It was so, so beautiful.
Anna Gantz Steiner, doctor of medicine, specialized in psychiatry. She was describing her own near-death experience that transformed her from a skeptical scientist to a firm believer in a life after death. Is it hard to die? Where do we go after death? Are we reunited with departed loved ones? And what do the world's great religions tell us about what awaits us after this physical life? These were the talking points in Basel as internationally known personalities in the occult field lectured and gave demonstrations of their abilities. We've all seen those movies, a circle of people holding hands around a table. The lights are dim. Presiding over this spiritualist seance is a deadly, serious, scary-looking medium who goes into trance. A few seconds later, messages from departed loved ones start emanating from the lips of the medium. Or an apparition may even appear in the room to the startled screams of the more faint-hearted of the sitters.
There's a decision you have to make, and it's to do with Mother. And so I have to say to you, from your father, leave things as they are at the moment. It's very hard for you, but the father is very, very happy.
That was one of Britain's most famous mediums, Gay Muir. No dark rooms here. This was a brightly lighted public session in which Miss Muir picked out individuals in the audience and passed on messages that were directed to them by deceased friends and relatives anxious to make contact.
Mediumship is a very natural phenomenon. You see, people do not realize that when we're born, God gives us two bodies. One is a genetic and the other is a spiritual. And we don't have to wait until we die to use the spiritual body. So when I am operating as a medium, I'm extending my spiritual body. Therefore, that spiritual body can touch the discarnate bodies and can communicate. It's almost the same as when you are dreaming, and many times you see a loved one in the dream. I am absolutely sure it's not a dream. What it is you have, in your relaxation, let your spiritual body grow a little bit, and your spiritual body has recognized the visiting entity. But as soon as you wake up and you think, oh, your spiritual body goes back in, and you've lost it.
This concept of two bodies, some, for example, the Hindus would go even beyond that, but to keep it simple, the physical body and the spiritual body. Is this the same as the soul or the spirit?
Yes.
This is one and the same?
Yes. I understand that we're born into this world to learn the ways of life and living. And when we've reached the necessities that we needed to learn on this particular trip, we then go back with our spiritual body to the heavens, and we can remember everything that went before, but we are not encumbered with a painful body. There is no virus in the spirit, you know.
So there's no doubt in your mind that the personality, the memory, everything remains intact even after physical death?
Most definitely. Everything that lives in this world has life force, call it spirit or whatever you want. And when it dies in this world, it goes to the next world. If it's a tree, it's there in its glory. If it's the flowers, if it's an animal, the animals are there as well. And the spirit body just leaves the dying body and walks straight into the arms of perhaps their mother or their father or whoever they want, maybe their child. You don't know who's there until you see them. There's always someone there who will guide you.
Are the spirits spying on us, as it were? Are they watching every movement?
No, absolutely not. When we are raised, we are taught etic things. Don't go into mummy's bedroom. Don't go into the bathroom if somebody's in there. Don't get undressed in front of people. It's a code of honor, and that code of honor is still there.
If you have that code, presumably other entities do not. They might be voyeurs.
Well, when you're saying other entities do not, then they are not the entities that we in the movement contact.
Is there punishment in the other world?
If you go back to the medieval times, everybody was taught to fear. Do as you're told or else. And that has rubbed its way into the church.
Controlled by fear.
That's right. And in our understanding, there is no fear. God is all love. I can tell you, you know, where people actually come and say, my punishment is seeing the sorrow that I've caused. But God is good. And I'm in the love. And I'm in the light. If only the people of our world would realize that when, if somebody sticks a knife in the back of you, when they go to spirit, the first person they're going to see is you. And that's going to be a very hard time for them. You punish yourself.
The celebrated British medium, Gay Muir. Another well-known English medium is Alan Stuttle. He attracted considerable attention in Basel because of the form of his mediumship. He's a psychic artist who draws and paints pictures according to instructions received from the spirit world. Mr. Stuttle says he doesn't fully understand how this works technically, but he's absolutely convinced that his inspiration comes from spirits trying to contact the living.
In fact, I've drawn drawings of people that have come back from the spirit world, and people have recognized them. They said, oh, that's my Uncle Fred, or that's my son, or that's my daughter. And they have come back in a recognizable form. And this is how psychic art works. I feel the energies from the spirit world come into the mind, and they are transferred onto the picture. You can do a drawing of, say, a daughter that has passed into the spirit world, who had a ring given by her grandmother, who used to like to be walking in a particular area. And instead of actually describing them by words, you can use your colour and you can use your pencil, and you can actually draw the places that the person has visited.
One important detail here, are you doing what we might call automatic drawing or painting, in the sense that the spirit takes control of your hand or of your fingers, or do you still have control?
You still have control, but you remember that you're open to the energies of the spirit world.
But there are so many spirits there. How can you hone in on just one?
With great difficulty, because very often when you're doing a drawing on the an easel, you'll start one drawing and sometimes they'll argue who's coming over onto the drawing. If you get two people, say a grandfather and a grandmother, and the grandmother was more predominant than the grandfather, they will start arguing, no, it's going to draw me, it's going to draw me, it's going to draw me. So you get to say, I'm sorry, I've got two of you here, so you'll end up drawing two people.
So you have to blow the whistle as the medium.
Blow the whistle, say, oh, stand back a little bit, you know.
I'm curious about the technical thing that happens, the procedure. Do you go into trance, or do you just conduct your life normally and suddenly you get a very strong impression, I have to get to the canvas, I have to get to the easel? How does this work?
No, when you're doing a psychic drawing, you have a few moments quiet, you sit down and you link in. You don't particularly have to prepare, because you're already prepared. I've done it for 50 years. You know, you already know what's going to happen. Your technical ability is there. You just wait for the feelings of the people to come through.
English psychic artist Alan Stuttle. Life after death was the very first subject dealt with at the Basel Parapsychology Days when they began in 1982. 15 years later, no new evidence could be presented that would convince the skeptics of the existence of a life hereafter. On the other hand, nothing was presented that would disprove it either. In the final analysis, it's a matter of personal persuasion or faith. And in formulating our attitude, we can't avoid religion. So what do the world's great theologies tell us about what happens to us after death? Guido von Arx is a Swiss specialist in comparative religion.
All of them agree that there is life after death. But for the Semitic religions, like Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, officially nowadays, since a few hundred years, they don't accept reincarnation, but they accept that life continues, and if you're a pious person, a religious person, you follow the Quran or the Bible, you go to the kingdom of God in a new body and a new life. Whereas Buddhism and Hinduism say that's of course the goal, to return in the eternal kingdom of God, but you may not necessarily go there in your next life. God gives you other chances to qualify yourself in new bodies, in new forms.
Basically, you've got to be perfect to go back.
Right. And what are these qualifications? Actually, there you can find a common aspect in all religions. They say, thou shalt love God with all thy heart. So if you love God purely, totally, you will return to Him. But if you don't love God, you love more this world, why should you go back to God?
What happens when we die?
Generally, it's a very painful situation. The body is inhabited by consciousness called the soul.
And this permeates every cell, every nerve ending of the body.
Exactly. And death means the soul is separated from the body. The normal souls living in this world, they're attached to that body. So death means you're forced out of that body. And most people are not ready.
What is the best way to prepare for the eventuality of death?
First, you have to know some knowledge. Knowledge means understanding the difference between the physical body and the eternal spirit soul, and that you're different from the body. And religions, the scriptures are there to prepare you that at the moment of death you can think of God, concentrate on God, reunite with God, and return to God. That's the whole process of religion. Religion comes from the Latin word liare. Liare means to link, and re means to link again. It's actually the linking process of the soul with God.
When the soul leaves the body, obviously the question is, where does it go?
It depends. They may have to stay for some time as a ghost, hover above the surface of the earth, and due to attachment, they try to come back either to their relatives or go to the graveyard because their body is lying there.
These are the so-called earthbound spirits.
Right. You always hear that there's so many ghosts around the graveyard. For the simple reason, they're still attached to that body. Some are very powerful and very demoniac, and some are more neutral, and some are even so-called good spirits. There's a whole variety of them. But as I said, they have one big problem. They want physical bodies. That's why they come to Earth to try to enter into certain bodies. It's generally recommended not to open yourself to those spirits because you don't know what's going to happen. And because they have subtle energies and subtle powers, they're generally beyond our own powers. So you expose yourself to something which can become very dangerous. Rather, remain simple, work on this phenomenal physical world and contact the spiritual world through God and the true representatives of God, and skip those subtle energies and spirits and ghosts in between, because it's a dangerous world, as mentioned before.
A lot of evil spirits there waiting to come in.
Definitely.
So we go back to the religious theme again. You'd be much better advised to concentrate on your own spiritual development and leave the departed spirits to their own problems.
Exactly.
The Swiss comparative theologian Guido von Arx, with a collective warning from the world's great religions about the dangers inherent in dabbling in spiritualism. One of the issues at the 1997 edition of the Basel Parapsychology Days, the theme of which was life after death. This is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.